right, we have music, and we are now live on the World Wide Web, as they call it, visiting with, we never know how many. That's part of what makes this so much fun. The last couple times we've done this, we will start with a couple dozen, 30, 40, 50 people, hundreds. By the time we're done, it has grown to thousands on a number of occasions as people begin to get notification and realize that we are live on the web. So welcome to our Pro Football Weekly Facebook Live, coming to you from Heroes West in Joliet, home of some of the greatest Bears fans in the world. We know there are some Packers fans out here as well. And while we are Pro Football Weekly, and we do work hard to be the authority on all 32 teams in the National Football League, because we are here in Joliet, we're going to concentrate on the Bears for you a little bit tonight. In case you haven't heard, there's been a little bit of news. And before I go any further, I do want to introduce my partners here. To my left, our senior editor, Arthur Arkish, who has a familiar name. Yes, he is also my middle son, and that is not why he's with us. He is one of the top football writers in the country. We're in trouble if I'm losing my voice at the start, guys. One of the top football writers in the country. Also covers the NFC North for USA Today Sports Weekly. And to my right, Chris Bowden, new to Pro Football Weekly. I know many of you will recognize him from his many years at CBS TV and more recently at Comcast Sportsnet. And Chris has been writing for us for about a week now. And guys, where else can we start but with the new quarterback? And I know the question that I have been asked the most often in the last 24, 48, 72 hours, is he ready? Is it the right time? Why are the Bears doing this now? So, Arthur, you are the senior guy here. I'll let you opine a little bit first. Why now? Is it the right move? And is the kid ready?
No, he's probably not ready yet. But the time is now because Mike Glennon has forced the Bears' hand. John Fox said today that the plan all along was to buy the rookie as much time as possible. And as it turns out, $18.5 million only buys you about four games. So Mike Glennon didn't get the job done, and the Bears need someone that's at least going to give them a chance in games. Fox said today that Glennon didn't give the Bears a chance in either of their road games in Tampa Bay and Green Bay. So I think Trubisky's athleticism, I think his pure arm talent, and they hope his intangibles is what's going to kind of get him through until he's actually ready. And, boy, what a test he's going to get Monday night in one of the most complex defenses in the NFL for someone who's only had 13 games in college to try and even begin learning how to dissect defenses.
You know, Chris, that's the part that we discuss so much, and I don't think we can discuss it too much. A large part of this is the fact that Mitch Trubisky doesn't really have strong college credentials for us to look at, let alone any NFL experience. And generally, when a player is the second overall choice in the NFL college draft, he has started for at least two, usually 3 years in college. The only other comp that we have here would be Cam Newton, who did just start the 1 year at Auburn, but that was after winning a national championship in junior college, after being a starter in Florida before being asked to leave school there. There really is no real comp to how limited Trubisky's experience and preparation is, and that's why everybody is making such a big deal out of the fact that it's happening just 4 weeks into the season.
You have to hope that he's a quick study, and by all accounts and purposes, what he was able to do through the course of training camp and the preseason gives us an indication that he can catch on quickly. However, it's a whole different story when you're there at the line of scrimmage and you're facing the kind of caliber defense that the Minnesota Vikings have had now for the last couple of seasons, both in terms of talent, in terms of personnel, and in terms of the guy who calls all the shots, and Mike Zimmer, who has a long storied history and how good historically he's been a defensive coordinator in this league for a long time before finally getting his break as a head coach of the Minnesota Vikings a couple of years ago. And the other factor you have to account for is the fact that Mitch Trubisky does not have the same type of weapons that Deshaun Watson has around him in Houston. Not to say that, while adding that Watson has two full college years of high-end national championship experience as opposed to Trubisky. And, on top of that, is a little bit more familiar with a pro-style offense than Trubisky has. Again, you have to hope he's a quick study, that Dow, Loggins, and company can put him at least into positions to succeed. But you know that the Vikings are going to try and pull out every trick in the book, especially on national television. and especially coming off a loss at home to the Detroit Lions this past weekend, they're going to come in with a chip on their shoulder, and while all the hype will be around Trubisky, they're going to have something to prove too.
You know, guys, this really is a national story. We're obviously very focused on it here in Chicago, but it's making headlines all over the country, in large part because of what Dak Prescott did last year, because DeShone Kizer has been starting since day one in Cleveland, because of what DeShone Watson did 2 days ago. And there had been a lot of conversation, really, nationally from 2 days ago. Did Arthur what DeShone Watson did add extra pressure to John Fox, to Ryan Pace, to get Mitch Trubisky on the field? I believe the answer to that is absolutely not. I don't think they really care about that at all. And I think Chris just touched on it. What Bears fans are going to have to be careful with here is there are no comps between Trubisky and the other three first-round quarterbacks because of the limited experience. DeShone Watson played in two college national championship games that are bigger than any regular season NFL games he's ever going to play in. He is much more experienced, much better prepared. Anybody who's looking for a performance out of Trubisky to rival what Watson did Sunday, that's just not reasonable.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And they're different types of players. I know Bears fans are excited about the improved athleticism that Trubisky's going to bring to the table above and beyond what Mike Glennon had, because it wasn't much, and he wasn't really able to turn something, make something out of nothing. So different circumstances there. But I think what we're saying is that it's going to be very important for Dowell Loggins, Chris, to make sure that he is putting Trubisky in as comfortable of a situation as possible. Mm-hmm. I think that's about certainly getting back to some of the play action, the boot action type of stuff that we saw in the preseason that, ironically, although Mike Glennon is the more experienced option, I think Dowell's hands were a little bit tied in what he could do offensively in that regard, because it became very apparent in week one versus Atlanta when they tried to do that naked bootleg that Mike Glennon just doesn't, he's not fleet of foot enough to avoid trouble. He took a sack that I think the Bears are counting on Mitch Trubisky is not going to take in a similar situation.
Yeah, and it's going to be fascinating to see how different the play calling is with the skill set that Trubisky has compared to Mike Glennon. That's going to serve Trubisky well, but at the same time, you just hope that, a Kendricks or a Barr doesn't come here and kill the poor kid before he even has an opportunity. The other thing I was disappointed in is going to be so important on Monday night in this kid's debut is that offensive line that was finally together for the first time, the projected number ones finally together for the first time Thursday in Green Bay. I was really disappointed in their performance. Now, granted, it's kind of an orchestra. When you get together for the first time, being able to read what the guy next to you is doing. But this Green Bay defense was without its top defensive lineman, and they couldn't establish a running game, and that's a real concern. This offensive line is going to have to step up against Minnesota in order to make Trubisky look good. There's a possibility the kid could light it up for all intents and purposes. But then after that, you see it every year with some of these star quarterbacks. They have a good couple of games or two. We saw it a year ago with Carson Wentz, where he got off to a great start the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season. And then the NFL and the defenses get a look at him on tape and start adjusting. It's almost that second adjustment that these kids have to make that's going to be the real telling tale. Now, if we have to talk about a comp, one thing that I bring up is what Jared Goff went through last year. Jeff Fisher refused to put the number one overall pick in for the first 9 games of the season, I believe. Kept preaching that he wasn't ready. Even, I think, was a little hesitant to put him in there in week 9 or week 10. And things did not go well for Jared Goff because he was still learning the pro-style offense, still learning the system, and he didn't have enough weapons around him. Now, after getting some weapons, after getting some knowledge behind him and in terms of what their playbook is like, and on top of that, getting an offensive mind like Sean McVay to work with him, we're starting to see Jared Goff and the Rams reap the benefits of that. And, you know, if it is a slow start for Trubisky and, you know, fans are a little bit disappointed by the way things go, you also have to keep that in mind for the big picture.
Well, you know, Chris, there was one other issue with Jared Goff, which is certainly relevant to this Chicago Bears team, that Jeff Fisher and his offensive coordinator, Rob Boris, Mike Groh, who was the Bears receiver coach, went out there to be their passing game coordinator. They ran easily the most conservative offense in the last 3 or 4 decades in the NFL. When they put Goff on the field, they did not put him in a position to succeed. They were only letting him throw 10, 12 times. The running game wasn't working. He kept getting into trouble, and he had an awful six starts once he finally got on the field. And so now, you know, one of the questions I think that we've been discussing since they drafted Trubisky, and that really is going to be a popular discussion now, is Dowell Loggins, is Dave Ragone, is John Fox, are these the right coaches to develop a young quarterback like this, and particularly one who did not get the experience in college that a lot of the top prospects do?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think we saw early signs in the preseason. I think we saw actually when Dowell switched things up, whenever Trubisky was got his time in the preseason, we saw some differences schematically in Dowell's ability to play to Trubisky's strength. So he's going to have to build on that. But I've been a little troubled by what I've seen in recent weeks. No, Mike Glennon hasn't been even close to NFL caliber, starter caliber, excuse me. But where have the tight ends been in the offense? We heard all offseason about how the offense was going to run through these tight ends, and they haven't been featured nearly enough. And, you know, maybe the wide receivers will improve with better quarterbacking, but I think they absolutely need to get back to that. And building on what Chris said, because I agree wholeheartedly, I do think the offensive line was dealing from a short deck when you fall in a 14-0 hole, obviously, and then you're kind of already limited in what you want to do, how much of your playbook you want to utilize. But it gets back to that run game, and Dowell has to understand that that's largely what's going to determine the early success or failure for Mitch Trubisky, is how much he can depend on that run game. Not only Jordan Howard, of course, but Tariq Cohen, and just knowing what your strengths are and playing to them and building an offensive identity, which we've seen the Bears start to do, but I don't think we've seen them do it nearly consistently enough just yet.
Yeah, and from the offensive line, from their standpoint, you need more from them. When we started training camp in Bourbonnais, Ryan Pace, John Fox, their opening press conference, they were asked what this team's strengths are, where they might be improved from a year ago. And the first two areas that they mentioned were offensive line. Well, if everybody's healthy and accounted for, that should be the case. It didn't happen until this past Thursday in Green Bay. And the other position was tight ends. And you mentioned it, Arthur. For some reason, those tight ends where, you know, you're deep and you have a certain level of talent that you might be able to match up against virtually any other team in the league, they were targeted just three times in that game in Green Bay. So if you're... they have a shortage of talent and a shortage of playmakers to begin with. But if you want to do anything with this team, as short as they are at wide receiver, you want to get Howard and Cohen and Zach Miller and Deion Sims on the field at the same time. You're probably going to need one to help out if defenses are stacking eight in the box to stop the run. But it's not like you should be totally turning away from some of your best assets of what you have offensively. And in my mind, three targets was way too few many in that game against Green Bay.
And you mentioned Cohen, too, Chris. Obviously, running back and not a tight end, but critical. It seems like after he made a couple early mistakes, he has his breakout game in week one, and then just a few rookie mistakes that perhaps the Bears got a little bit timid with the way they wanted to use him. You haven't seen him as much in the passing game either in recent weeks. So another point of emphasis, I believe, for Dowell to try and set up Trubisky for success starting Monday night.
We need to reset the table every 5-10 minutes as people continue to join us. Of course, you all know you're with us here at Heroes West in Joliet. We really appreciate you all coming out. We are also live on Facebook right now. And what happens when we do these is the audience is growing as we speak. People are logging on. They are joining us. So if you are not here with us, Heroes West is actually the spot you should hit. If you're anywhere in the south suburbs, anywhere around the south side of Chicago. You are familiar, of course, with ProFootballWeekly.com. That is probably how you got to us on Facebook. You can also read our work in all of our Shaw Media newspapers, which, of course, include the Joliet Herald News and the Northwest Herald out in Crystal Lake, out in DeKalb, out in Kane County, all across the northern half of Illinois. And you can see our products on television, the Pro Football Weekly TV show every weekend on what is now, I'm told, NBC Sports. I'm trying to get used to that. It was Comcast Sportsnet for years. That'll be the Pro Football Weekly show and the Chicago Football Now show from Pro Football Weekly on WCIU on the U every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. And if you are not playing in our U Pick'em contest, you really should be. It's a lot of fun. There's great prizes. You can get there at ProFootballWeekly.com. You can get there at the Joliet Herald News, any of the Shaw papers. Please join us there. And again, we are thrilled to be with you live from Heroes West here in Joliet this evening. And talking a little bit about Mitch Trubisky, the new starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears. And you know, guys, I think the thing that concerns me the most is the idea that he is expected to come in, be an NFL quarterback on day one with his limited experience, upgrade this offense. Now, just taking care of the football will be an upgrade. At the end of the day, that's why he's playing.
Right.
You know, we had some fun at the expense of Mike Glennon because of that very awkward press conference where he said, I believe it was counted seven times.
It's my year.
This is my year. This was his year, and he gave it back. If he had not turned the football over 10 times in the first four games, he would definitely still be the starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears. So priority one for Mitch Trubisky, take care of the football. Priority two, settle into the position, learn to read defenses, find the open receiver. But what worries me so much is the Bears have an extreme deficit at the wide receiver position right now. There's just no better way to spin it. I mean, you're basically starting guys in Deontay Thompson and Josh Bellamy alongside Marcus Wheaton. At least Marcus Wheaton is a legitimate NFL number three, maybe a number two. Bellamy and Thompson probably couldn't play wide receiver for any other team in the NFL. They're great special teams players. They're great football players. I am not trying to target those two guys. They're just not NFL receivers. And asking a rookie quarterback to emerge and to develop a top-flight NFL passing game with those kind of weapons, you know, Arthur, I don't know how he gets that done. You mentioned the tight ends. Zach Miller and Tariq Cohen lining up in the slot have to be his best friends right now and his favorite targets.
Yeah, no doubt about it, but I do think we also have to find out just how good or bad the receivers are. I know that one of our colleagues, Greg Gabriel, who spent close to 30 years as an NFL scout, including a college scouting director for the Bears, said this week, well, and he's not trying to paint the Bears receivers as one of the better groups in the league, but maybe they're not the worst either. We didn't necessarily see Mike Glennon take a lot of chances at all trying to get them involved in the passing game. So, and Marcus Wheaton has been a little disappointing for me. I know he's got he's coming off the broken pinky, but Glennon gave him a couple opportunities. A few of the only ones we can count went to Marcus Wheaton in his first game versus the Steelers, and just a couple flat drops for Wheaton. So maybe it's Trey McBride. It sounds like he's going to get an opportunity this week, called up off the practice squad, claimed off waivers from the Titans right before final cutdown, I believe, and Ryan Pace has had some success in that regard. So yes, they're going to need help. They're going to need to supplement the receivers with the tight ends and the running backs, but maybe Trubisky's arm talent, maybe Trubisky's willingness to or ability to see the field and see some chances could help us at least slightly change the narrative with these wideouts before the year's over.
Arthur, you're not even bringing up Tanner Gentry, the savior.
the next big thing,
he's
right?
He's the everyman.
Yeah.
But to be quite honest, he and Trubisky seem to have some level of chemistry now.
Right.
Going up against that secondary for Minnesota, you throw Tanner Gentry in there. I'm not sure how that's going to go. But you know, another fascinating part of this, guys, is that it's not only an audition for Trubisky, but you brought this up a little bit earlier. This is also a key time for Dow Loggins specifically to see how he can bring this kid along with what he has to work with. It's a key time for John Fox in a make-or-break contract year, as he is now in the midst of year three of year four and of his contract. And the other part of it is that this is also a reflection on Ryan Pace, too. He has to be crossing his fingers, crossing his eyes, crossing his toes, hoping this looks at least something presentable for the future, because what happened with Mike Glennon isn't a good look. He's had hit or misses in free agency, a lot of tough luck in the draft as far as injuries are concerned, and it's also year three for him. Now, I don't think he's walking down any plank at all. I believe he's well-liked in Hallis Hall. I believe if John Fox does go, he'll get another opportunity to bring in another head coach, specifically offensive-minded. But this is going to go a long way in terms of determining the temperature of how fans and the organization feels about Pace and Dow Loggins and John Fox, the same way it's been with the fans, too.
Yeah, I don't think there's much question that if Mitch Trubisky does not become a very good quarterback. He better not be Jay Cutler. And by the way, Jay Cutler is not a bad quarterback. He just was never worth the two first-round picks that they invested in trying to bring him over here. He never met the expectations. Now, you know, Mitch is going to get a chance. It's not going to be decided at the end of this year. It shouldn't really be decided at the end of next year. You know, we'll have some idea maybe in 2019 what you've really got here. But it's kind of hard to – and I'm a Ryan Pace guy. I like more of what he's done than what I dislike.
Me too.
I do think he's got a chance to be the right guy for this organization. But it is fair to ask the question – as badly as they appear to have missed on Mike Glennon, why are we assuming that they're evaluating the other quarterback, Mitch Trubisky, right? We're going to find out on the field. We don't have to make that decision just by guessing. But you talk about the pressure on Pace. I mean, that's where the pressure really lands squarely, is this kid has to be right. Mm-hmm. He's got to get a pass on Kevin White. It's not the GM's fault if you break three bones in 3 years. Leonard Floyd has shown some flashes of maybe being a really good football player. I am a little puzzled by the way Vic Fangio is using him right now. We can talk more about that in a few minutes. But I think he probably got that one right. And actually, that draft class from last year still holds some real promise. This class still holds some real promise. And so it's way too early to start doubting Ryan Pace, but it is certainly fair to say that as goes the production of Mitch Trubisky, as goes the reputation of Ryan Pace.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Chris said that it's pretty normal for GMs to get two shots at hiring a head coach, and I think we're all in agreement that if this is the end for John Fox after this season, and I don't know that we're predicting it, but it's certainly a real possibility that Pace will get another opportunity there. But you don't get two opportunities to trade up to number two overall and draft a future franchise quarterback. So, and Hub, I know we've talked about this a little bit in the past few days. I think it's fair to at least be a little leery if you're Bears fans and you see how off the evaluation was on Glennon and the $18.5 million. And then you see them make the bold move up to number two just 6 weeks later at the same position. So do you think that Pace kind of felt like he was backed into a corner a little bit at the quarterback position because he went his first two full years here without addressing it at all? And I'm not condoning if you make a bad evaluation because of that, but do you guys feel like he felt like he was a little bit behind the eight ball after not doing anything in the first couple of years, and maybe that influenced the decision-making?
Well, we've all heard the reports. I don't know how much you've heard about it, Hub, is that he really had a desire to try and get Marcus Mariota a couple of years ago, and that was his true desire in the first year that he had in the 2015 draft. Wasn't able to make that happen. There was some buzz that part of that deal may be sending Jay Cutler back to his hometown in Nashville in order to make that happen. It did not. The real problem that I think Ryan Pace faces here is that he'll be going into his fourth draft, provided he's still around, with repetitive needs. His first draft, there was a need after getting rid of Brandon Marshall to use it on a wide receiver, and Kevin White was that guy. And through no fault of his own, because of the bad luck with Kevin White, now we're going into the 2018 draft where he's going to have to do it all over again, probably need to find a free agent too to fortify that wide receiver core. And when you look back at that 2015 draft right now, through bad luck with injuries and other circumstances, basically all he has out of that is Eddie Goldman, his number two pick, and what is really a backup safety in Adrian Amos. That's all he has to show for his first draft. So this is when things start getting a little bit off track, when you start having to use repetitive picks at the same position in certain drafts down the road when you're not able to have answers for that. And that's part of this whole evaluation, too, of Ryan Pace and taking a hard look. I'm a big fan of his, too. But when you start getting into the situation where you're going through retreads, finding yourself repeating yourself in the draft and free agency and not, you know, eventually filling all those needs with an answer that you can rely upon, that's when the evaluation gets a little bit tougher for GMs.
Well, and Chris, you make a great point there, because I think what we have to remember, to be fair, as much of a disaster as the Phil Emery, Mark Trestman regime was, what they inherited was basically 4 years of horrible drafting by Jerry Angelo. Now, Jerry gets a bad rap sometimes because his first four or five drafts were actually very good. He found some very good football players. He built a Super Bowl team. They didn't win it, but they got to a Super Bowl. But it was after that Super Bowl that those drafts started going south. And so what you really have is the reason that the Bears are now one of the four or five worst teams in the league, at least today, record-wise, and based on production the last year plus, is you're looking at 8 to 9 years of bad drafting. There is just no, other than Kyle Long, there's nothing to hang your hat on from any of the last three regimes. So there's actually been some other stories around the NFL today. We've got about 10, 15 minutes left. Again, we are coming to you Pro Football Weekly live on Facebook from Heroes West here in Joliet.
South
thrilled
side.
To be out. We got a great crowd out here.
I
hope the people on Facebook are being as nice to us as everybody here at Heroes West is. It is really great to be with you guys. We are thrilled to be here. If you are anywhere in the South Suburbs, we're going to be wrapping up in a little while here tonight. But anytime you can get out to Heroes West, the food is great. The beer selection is outstanding. The drinks are great. There's big screens everywhere. If you want to watch sports, want to have a great evening, have a great meal, come on out to Heroes West. And we thank them so much for having us and being our host tonight for this Facebook Live event. I mentioned other news around the NFL. As we were all heading over here, the NFL announced that the two-game suspension of Danny Trevathan for the vicious hit on Devontae Adams in the Packers game Thursday night has, in fact, been appealed and has been reduced. Trevathan will only be suspended one game instead of two. I can tell you that I think everybody who studies this, who does this for a living, expected that to happen. That is the correct decision. Danny Trevathan has to be suspended. That hit is the textbook definition of what they are trying to take out of the National Football League this year. And there was a new rule put in this year specifically for the purpose of ejecting players and suspending them for one game for that type of hit. Now, in the case of Danny Trevathan, he has no history. He does not have a reputation as a dirty player. He has never been disciplined before. And so a lot of people were surprised when the initial ruling was a two-game suspension. And the belief was that it was a bit of an overreaction to the fact that it was national TV, that the league wanted to make an example. It seems that all those things have been considered. And I know I was on the air yesterday at NBC and said I expected it to be reduced to one game. I'm not surprised by this. Arthur, Chris, I don't know if you guys agree.
I agree completely. I mean, I think what the appeal tells us is that Danny Trevathan isn't Vontaze Burfict, and that's the guy who's gotten...
If he has a previous offense, then it stays at two. And it's probably even larger than two.
Exactly. So I think, Trevathan has a reputation for being a fierce hitter and a relentless player, but not a cheap shot artist. And, I think that is the reason that we saw it reduced to one game. And I just... I think the Bears are very fortunate because they are so thin, obviously, now without Jarrell Freeman and Nick Kwiatkoski that they can't afford to be without Trevathan any longer than they need to be. So it's good news for the Bears, of course.
Yeah, so you're looking at Christian Jones, John Timu, and Jonathan Anderson as your inside linebackers on Monday night against the Vikings, who, by the way, really suffered their own personal big injury blow in losing Dalvin Cook. Kid was really you could see the kind of talent that he had, not only at Florida State, but it was translating to the NFL level the first couple weeks of the season. Yeah, I think we saw this coming with the suspension being reduced to one game with Trevathan. Maybe there was a little bit of frustration in what was going on in that game Thursday night for Trevathan, especially with, second half, the offense wasn't helping them at all. And this is a guy who has been through a couple of major injuries himself. Now, he had momentum going and probably couldn't turn on the brakes. Could he have, softened the blow a little bit? Perhaps. But I think there was also some frustration in the ferocity of that hit. And I don't know if any of you guys happen to hear Tommy Thayer, the former Bear, who's from Joliet, by the way.
Yeah.
When he was asked on the radio about that play the morning after, he said, "I blame Aaron Rodgers for that hit on Devontae Adams, because Aaron Rodgers shouldn't have been throwing it to Devontae Adams when he was surrounded by three or four guys and would eventually be held up." Well, he probably heard from a couple of people north of the border about that. I've found it rather amusing, but a stretch, I think, to say the least. Yes.
For those of you who are guests here at Heroes West tonight, I should have mentioned earlier, I believe we have a raffle that we are doing, courtesy of Shaw Media, the Joliet Herald News, and Heroes West as well. We've got some really neat prizes if you have not filled out a ticket. There's some beautiful bottles of liquor, but there are also some sports memorabilia pieces. I think I heard, Laura, did you say we have a Dan Hampton helmet? Is that correct? We have an autographed helmet from Dan Hampton that we're going to be raffling off, some other great prizes. If you did not fill out a ticket, if you want to come up to this table right in front of us here, there's a couple folks filling out their tickets right now. Throw those in the box, and we'll give some prizes away in just about 10 minutes or so. Another interesting story today that is not Chicago Bears related is the NFL has announced, and I promise you, I'm not this stupid. I am not going to start a political conversation here. We're not going to choose sides. We're not going to say somebody's right or wrong. But we cannot ignore the news. We are constantly being told to stick to sports, and we do that. Well, chief amongst the news and sports in the NFL right now are the player protests that are going on around the league, fans' reaction to it, the fact that the president got involved. The NFL released a statement in correlation with the NFL Players Association just about 2 hours ago. This is the first thing that the owners and the players have agreed on in 100 years. It's a joint statement that they met today, that they are discussing the issue, and they are trying to find ways for their players to continue to have a positive impact on their communities while trying to avoid potentially upsetting demonstrations for some of their fans, that the process is ongoing, that they will be continuing their discussions, and that players will continue to be allowed to express themselves in whatever manner they see fit. So it's not really saying anything is changing or different, but it is acknowledging the situation. It is saying that we are working on it together. And I think, Arthur, if we had to put a spin on this, it is the owners clearly sending a message to the president that they are going to continue to support their players, that they're not just going to back away.
Right, and I applaud them for it. You got so many people out there in today's society who would rather just stick their head in the sand, and I think it's encouraging that the NFL isn't going to go down that road and that they're going to try and advance the conversation and make it constructive, and it's a positive thing. As Hub kind of joked, the NFL and the NFLPA don't tend to see eye to eye on these things, so it is encouraging that they appear to be in lockstep on this, and we'll see what becomes of it, because it's clear that the conversation does need to occur. And sorry if you don't agree, I'm not going to stick to sports. I think sports is a platform where it needs to occur as well, and I'm just encouraged by the NFL's willingness to do so along with their players.
Well, part of this too is that the owners can't afford to alienate their players too. Sure. By going on the complete opposite end of things. And you know, what are the answers to this if people do continue to be angered by it? I'm not sure. I can't recall whether the national anthem was always shown on TV. I want to say back in the day that, you know, as recently as a few years ago, we never saw the national anthem being played. Commercials were going on at that point. And I'm not saying out of sight, out of mind makes the issue, you know, it makes it a non-issue at all. But that's an interesting part of all this. I wrote, too, last week about, you know, if, you know, we're concerned about TV ratings turning off a certain segment of the population with players expressing themselves in that manner before or during the national anthem. What is an answer? Is a public service announcement like the Cleveland Browns did before their season opener and then walking out in lockstep with first responders and police officers prior to the game? Is a public service announcement by the players voicing their concerns on the stadium scoreboard, is that enough to get the message across? Or are people just going to turn their backs on that? What other ways can they do this? I know the Seattle Seahawks have started a foundation, but nevertheless still doing what they do during the course of the national anthem, trying to bring some awareness to what those players' concerns are. I think there are options out there, but by the same time, what really lords over this is the fact that I don't think management, NFL owners can afford to tick off their players, especially in, you know, things that are very important to them and hit close to home to them.
Yeah, I think the key message, and as the editor of Pro Football Weekly, I guess I get to choose the editorial policy. The message that we would like to convey to all of our readers and fans is that it is not the player's intent to disrespect or insult anybody. I'm not defending kneeling during the national anthem. It bothers me. I wouldn't do it. But the point that we would make, these players are trying to do something for their families and their communities, and they're trying to call attention to a very real problem, and they just want to be heard. Now, are they doing it correctly? That's not up to me to decide. I don't have the answer for that, and I'm not choosing sides in this. But I would hope that all NFL fans understand you really should be proud of these kids for what they're trying to do. You can be mad at them if you think they're doing it the wrong way, and I understand that, but it is not their intent to offend. It is their intent to do good in their communities, and I know at Pro Football Weekly we hope that that message will not be lost. We would also be horribly remiss if we did not take at least a moment here to send all of our thoughts and prayers to everyone involved in the horrible occurrences in Las Vegas. Sunday evening, Monday morning, we are continuing to feel the aftershocks. On behalf of all of us at Shaw Media, at Pro Football Weekly, our thoughts and prayers are with everybody who's been touched by that terribly tragic occurrence. And as it relates to our broadcast here tonight, Sean Payton, the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, apparently went off a little bit in his press conference today, visiting with the New Orleans media, with his dissatisfaction with the gun laws in America today and the way they're working. Again, I'm not choosing a side, guys, here. I didn't hear what he said. I'm not defending it. I'm just reporting it. And it is another issue that, as much as we prefer to stick to sports where we can, when it comes to us, it is our obligation to cover it. And so what is happening here, guys, is the NFL is being dragged in kicking and screaming, whether it wants to or not, in all the current events of the country. And I know a lot of people are reacting right now online, on Twitter, to what Sean Payton had to say. And it is going to be a conversation again, whether it lasts 2 days or 2 months, I don't know. But the natural reaction to what happened in Las Vegas is a lot of us just saddened and feeling somewhat lost and grasping at answers. And you now have head coaches in the NFL speaking out about it.
And this isn't the first time for Sean Payton, of course, after the beloved Saint Will Smith was killed in downtown New Orleans. Was that last year, two seasons ago? Just last year, I think, Sean Payton had a very impassioned speech about gun control at that time, too. And I haven't had a chance to read what he said today, but I'm sure it was along those same lines. And once again, I probably shouldn't go any further on this because I can't really talk about it without getting fairly impassioned myself. But I just think that it's good to see players and coaches use the platform for issues that so clearly are out of whack in society and need to be addressed.
And when they have the opportunity, that is the only platform that they have, because the national anthem gets televised now. Everything that is near and dear to these players' hearts, they're using that two and a half minutes, whatever it is, in order to make a stand or give their opinion when it otherwise wouldn't be heard. That's their opportunity on their biggest stage in order to spread that message, just like it was for Sean Payton today. And as much money as these guys make is as fortunate a situation that all of them are in right now. And granted, it took a whole lot of blood, sweat, and tears for every one of those players to make the NFL or become an NFL head coach. I think they find it rather offensive that all they are supposed to do is entertain people, but when they have an opinion about something, they're not allowed to give it when everyone else around the world has their opinions about things, whether you agree with them or not.
It is basically very frustrating to us folks as sports media. We are people. We are like you. We are passionate about our flag, about our country, about our politics, about our beliefs. And yet we do understand that we have an obligation not to use the outsized platform that we have to try and push our own beliefs on you. And so we won't do that. You have my word that we won't do that. What we do ask, though, is that you don't have to agree with these athletes. You don't even have to respect what they're doing. But please listen to them, because all they're trying to do is share their thoughts and beliefs in the same way that all of you do, that we want to as media. And it is through that dialogue and through that conversation that hopefully eventually we all have a chance to make things better. So let's get back to football for just a moment. We do have to wrap up. More than a moment. We did not mean to get sidetracked there. Again, these are the issues that NFL teams, players, and fans are talking about, and we're trying to find the correct way to address them for you. As we get to the end of this edition of our Facebook Live from Heroes West, we look at the last three quarters of the Chicago Bears football season. Guys, I predicted everywhere that I could through the summer and the preseason that I thought the Bears were a little better than any of us realized they were, that they had a chance to be very good on defense. One of the few predictions I've actually gotten right recently is I had them at 1-3 after the first four games. Yep. They easily could have been 0-4. I look at the schedule now. Now, where you get into trouble is when you look at the schedule and you say, oh, they're going to have a great year. The schedule is easy. This schedule looked a lot easier about 3 months ago than it did now, with the Carolina Panthers looking like the 15 Panthers again. The New Orleans Saints pitched a shutout last week with that awful defense. I believe we're going to see Washington at some point. I'm not sure of that. I don't remember that. Even San Francisco at 0-4 is playing everybody very competitive. This schedule is a little tougher the last three quarters than it looked going in. But still, I see games now where the Bears can be competitive. And I still think the Bears have a crack at being a 500 football team over the last three quarters of the season. I don't think 6-6 is out of the question. A lot of it depends on how well Trubisky adapts and how quickly or how well he is able to take care of the football. But I think that you're going to enjoy the rest of the season as Bears fans a lot more than you may have enjoyed these first four games. Arthur, Chris, I don't know if you guys agree with me or not.
You weren't having fun watching Mike Glennon? What more did you need to see there? Obviously there's a natural excitement that is accompanied by Trubisky getting the call for sure. And when you just look at the next month's schedule, they're all winnable games. I mean, both road trips to Baltimore and New Orleans, those aren't really scary trips. Yes, Carolina's playing better. Minnesota's in disarray, as Chris said on a minute ago or a little while ago. It's very unusual to head into Monday night without knowing who's going to be a starting quarterback. Well, I guess we know Trubisky now is going to start. We don't know whether it's going to be Sam Bradford or right. Case Keenum. We have no idea if Latavius Murray can't do what Dalvin Cook does, but whether they can maintain that same type of identity. So, but yeah, big picture, I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about these Bears. I still think the defense needs to tighten up in terms of forcing turnovers. I thought that some of the confusion in the secondary that seems to happen every time they play Aaron Rodgers, it just can't be happening actually at this point. It's year three of this staff. I know there's a lot of new players, but to me that's a little bit of troubling, and I do think that the offense is going to need some short fields. They do need the defense to start forcing turnovers at some point.
Yeah, I figured 1-3 after 4 weeks. I knew 0-4 would be a possibility, but this could have even been 2-2 if they end up finishing a play against the Atlanta Falcons. Now, that glass half full view, I'm not sure if I see this team winning six games the rest of the way, but here's what you need to know. Who would have thought that one victory was going to come against the Pittsburgh Steelers in starting 1-3? There are going to be games in these final 12 weeks or 13 weeks, including the bye. You're not expecting them to win, and they're going to come up with a win. Then there's going to be an egg or two that they lay along the way. The most important thing, though, you have to hope for is that they keep this kid healthy throughout the remainder of the season. That's the reason you're going to be watching. That's going to be the main storyline. And the last thing they need is for him to suffer some kind of catastrophic injury that would set his timeline back even further. And then you're back to Mike Glennon and Mark Sanchez the rest of the way. So just keep your fingers crossed that they can keep him healthy the rest of the way. And you see some growth out of him no matter what weapons that he has. Or maybe he's able to bring something better out of the weapons that he's been handed here. You know, sometimes all you need is a spark. The locker room knows. They've probably known for a week or two that it's time for the kid to get a crack whether he's ready or not. There's a certain energy that will bring. How long they can sustain that energy beyond Monday night remains to be seen.
All right, folks, I'll tell you what we're going to do. It would probably be a little cheesy to start giving stuff away with the folks on Facebook who can't win it. So we're going to wrap up our Facebook Live presentation. Bear with me for just a moment, and then we're going to give away a bunch of great stuff to you all who've been good enough to come out and join us. We want to give our thanks one more time. A big round of applause for Heroes West. Great host here this evening. If you're anywhere in the south suburbs of Chicago, anywhere on the southern part of the northern half of the state in Illinois, come on out to Heroes West. It's a great spot. Please pick up your copies of the Joliet Herald News. Join us every Thursday with our Pro Football Weekly insert. Watch Pro Football Weekly and Chicago Football Now on TV. And stick around for just a moment so we can give some stuff away. That's it for tonight. Thank you and good night, guys.